Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Stephen Carpenter, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, Andy Clements, Elizabeth Demery, Tim Carlin, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Christopher Graybill, Peter Stray, Lily Beacon, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands number 34, Stoneface. As usual, Ryan didn't know where he was after the Matrens jump, but his mind was clear enough, and he was thankful he had been spared the horrible nightmares that were the frequent side effects of the Gateway's quantum energy overflow. In every redoubt, the octagonal design of the chamber remained the same, though each chamber was color-coded. The Predark engineers had obviously decided color-coding was the simplest method of differentiating the chambers. Evidently, so the original Gateway jumpers would know at a glance into which redoubt they had materialized. This Gateway chamber had dingy white walls, and they weren't made of the traditional translucent armor glass. Instead, they were heavy, mortared concrete blocks. The door was a slab of steel set tightly in the wall, a wheel lock jutting from the rivet-studded cross-beamed mass. A thin thread of light shone from a single overhead fixture, the glare stabbing at his eye. Christy sat up, brushing a wisp of crimson hair from her face.
Everybody feel all right?
Surprisingly, yes. One of the smoothest jumps I can remember. No nightmares, no nausea, dizziness, or headache. No jump sickness at all.
Mildred pushed herself into a sitting position. The stocky black woman looked around.
This isn't a Gateway chamber. Not exactly.
J.B. removed his spectacles from a capacious pocket of his coat.
Yeah, never saw a unit like this before.
Doc climbed to his feet with the help of his sword stick. The ceiling was low, and he couldn't stand at his full height.
Unusually cramped quarters. I would prefer less confined environs.
Ryan stood and went to the door. He had to stoop slightly, too. He put his hands on the wheel lock.
Triple red, people. Wheel hasn't been turned in a long time.
He stepped out, gun in hand. Everyone followed him, alert and watchful. Then they stopped and stared.
Dark night.
Where is this?
This isn't a redoubt.
They were in a medium-sized room with a dozen desks, most of them covered with computer terminals. Sheets of crumbling, flaking paper lay in pieces beneath discolored coffee cups and verdigris-eaten brass paperweights. A control console ran the length of one wall, consisting primarily of glass-encased readouts and gauges. A fine layer of dust clung to everything, coating the floor and instrument panels with a powdery gray film.
You're right. This is no redoubt.
Almost all of the redoubts they had visited in the past had standardized layouts, adhering to the same design specs. Here, there were no vanadium steel sectors, freestanding control consoles, or flickering display monitors. The door at the far end of the room was wood-paneled It had a simple knob rather than a lever or a Setcode keypad affixed to the frame.
Place looks more like an office or a classroom.
The Air Force.
Ryan turned toward Mildred. She held a scrap of paper gingerly between thumb and forefinger. A small dark blue symbol was emblazoned near its top edge, a bird with outspread, upcurving wings.
This is United States Air Force letterhead, a memo regarding the quantum interface transducer experiments. I think we jumped into a military testing facility with a prototype gateway chamber.
It's so old. There's probably not much we can use here.
Its power source is still operational.
Ryan walked to the door and put his hand on the knob. Following a procedure that was now ingrained habit, his five friends fanned out behind him, taking cover behind desks.
One, two.
Ryan peered carefully around the doorframe, staring into semi-darkness. He blinked. He was looking down a long, smooth corridor, a dim glow of light filtering from its far end. Gesturing behind him to the others, the one-eyed man stepped out cautiously, heel to toe. His companions joined him, pushing quietly through the dimness. JB took point, his Uzi in hand. The corridor turned to the left like an L. JB paused at the angle, gestured for the others to wait, and crept carefully out of sight. The glow of light widened, dissolving the darkness. Ryan's finger crooked tight on the trigger of his 6-hour.
Come on! You're not gonna believe what I found!
Several days later, Ryan heard the scream wings before he saw them. He whirled, his hand making a reflexive move toward the butt of the 6-hour, holstered at his hip. Jack Lauren inclined his white-haired head to the west.
Swarm of scream wings, stirred by vibrations. The WAG's engine.
Ryan looked behind him at the flat curve of black roadway 20 yards away. The Hotspur Hussar armored Land Rover sat there, the powerful turbocharged V8 engine idling. On the far side of the road, Christy Roth's bright red hair shone through the underbrush like a torch. She was examining the shrubs, searching for edible berries. She obviously hadn't heard the scream wings floating up from behind the western hills. Ryan turned back to the wooded foothills, which were at least a quarter of a mile away, dotted with large, bushy growths. At Ryan and Jack's insistence, the WAG had stopped so the companions could stretch their legs and relieve themselves after a 6-hour drive. Ryan assumed J.B. Dix was inside the vehicle with Mildred Wyeth and Doc Tanner. At least he hoped so. Jack jerked his thumb back toward the road. The scar-faced teenager's lips were set in a grim line. His ruby eyes narrowed.
Gotta move. Screaming's on top of us soon.
Ryan and Jack returned to the WAG at a trot, casting glances behind them. They still saw nothing.
Everybody back aboard! Screamwings!
Christy ran back up the slope to the roadbed. JB climbed out of the WAG, holding his Smith & Wesson M4000 shotgun tightly. His Uzi hung from a lanyard across his narrow chest.
Where?
Toward the hills. Here?
Yeah. Getting close.
Poking his head into the WAG, Ryan saw no sign of Mildred or Doc. He then looked across the roof of the vehicle.
Mildred! Doc!
Yes, Ryan?
Doc's response came from the tangled underbrush on the other side of the roadway.
I'll get them.
No. Stay put. Get inside and button up. JB, kill the engine.
The red-haired woman looked anxiously toward the foothills.
Can't we outrun them?
Worst thing we can do. Screamwings can't see unless something's moving. If we can't be on the move before the flock gets here, we've got to stay put. Leastways, that's what I'm told.
Ryan ran across the shoulder of the road, down the gentle slope, and through the undergrowth. He glanced back once and glimpsed a dark, twisting mass uncoiling from the far side of the hills, silhouetted by the sunset. Screamwings were rare. Ryan had never seen them, but he had heard plenty of stories about isolated settlements being completely wiped out by ravenous hordes of the winged predators. He continued through the waist-high weeds and tangled brush.
Mildred, Doc!
He reached a small clearing in the overgrown vegetation. The stocky woman and the tall, skinny man appeared on the opposite side.
You weren't supposed to wander far.
Sorry, Ryan.
My fault, Ryan. I'd hoped to find a blackberry patch in this morass. I fear my enthusiasm for pies and muffins infected the lady.
Let's hope our visitors don't have your sweet tooth.
Pardon?
That sound? Screamwings. A swarm is on its way.